Well, hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in show. I'm Alan Chartok in for Ray Graff. We've got one of the region's finest chefs in the studio with us today. He's going to answer your questions about food and fine dining. Peter Platt is here. Chicago native Peter Platt fell in love with the Berkshires while attending Williams College. How many chefs do you know who attended Williams, who graduated from Williams College? So after studying at the Cordon Bleu in London and doing a stint at the Parker House in Boston, he returned to the Berkshires to become executive chef at the famous Wheatley Inn. While there, he was featured on the Discovery Channel's Great Chefs of the East series. He and his wife, Meredith Kennard, bought the old Inn on the Green in 2003. Since then, they've earned top ratings by Zagat and AAA, and Open Table has dubbed the Old Inn on the Green one of the 10 most romantic restaurants in New England. I can attest to that. Every time I go there with Roselle, I fall in love with her again. So let's get to know Chef Platt. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Peter, it is an honor to have you with us.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, how does a guy go from Williams College to being a famous, world-famous chef?
Well, like a lot of young folks, I didn't have a strong inkling of what I was going to do with the rest of my life. So I had done a work-study program in Boston at the Parker House for a month during my senior year, and they offered me a job. So without any other prospects in mind, I took it. And
what made you go do an internship there?
You know, that's a good question. I had always an interest in cooking, of course, and I cook for friends and family and all that, but never thought of it as a career path. It was kind of the era, you know, in the early 80s, late 70s, before celebrity chefs and that sort of thing. So I had taken a course at the Cordon Bleu just, you know, for fun, and then I enjoyed it, so, you know, cooking so much, I thought I would, you know, ask around to hotels in Boston if they would take me as, you know, free labor. And they're all union hotels. The only one that would break the rules was the Parker House, and they hired me sort of under the table, and I did that.
So to speak.
Yeah, and so to speak, yeah. And it just worked out. There were some great chefs there at the time that, you know, were just cooks. Lydia Shire and Jasper White were working there, and there were some really inspirational people, a great sous chef, Andy D'Amico, that went on to be chef at Sign of the Dove, and the executive chef there, Joe Rebus, was well known amongst the Boston chefs.
So what did they have you doing?
Well, they had me. The first job I did was they put a big crate of green beans on the table
and said, "Cut the tips off."
And cut the tips off. Of course, I cut my finger pretty much in the first 30 seconds, and you know, with my brand new knife, and I'm trying to pretend like it's not cut, and you know, finally, eventually, I have to ask for a Band-Aid, you know, and I felt kind of silly, and that was an auspicious start to my career.
Did you watch the others doing things? I mean, did you literally learn from the others by what they were doing?
That's the only way that I've really, you know, picked up cooking is learning from the people that I work with, and I've worked with some amazing people over the years. I've been lucky to hire some wonderful cooks and chefs. And
don't you ever worry that they're looking over your shoulder and that they're gonna, you know, basically screw you by setting up a place across the street?
You know, I've had some chefs that have opened restaurants in the Berkshires, and they're my best friends. So
really,
I don't mind. You know,
you're benevolent.
Yeah, I don't mind competition. And. And I love good food, so it's always great to have a place to go on your day off.
1-800-348-2551. You met your wife at the Parker House, didn't you?
Yes. And
how'd that happen? What was she doing there?
I started in the lowest job possible as a breakfast cook, and I wasn't even cooking. I was just doing like cold food, and my wife was a server. And, you know, I guess the rest is history. It doesn't require much explanation beyond that.
Remember the first time you saw her?
I'm sure it was love at first sight, but I wouldn't want to
Yeah, you wouldn't want to go there.
Yeah.
Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Phones are beginning to light up. Okay, Peter, let me go through the menu with you for a moment. It's
sure.
an extraordinary menu. You know, I just want to ask you a couple of questions about this. So for Thursday, August 28th, right? That was yesterday?
Yes.
Okay, there was fennel and potato soup. Is that hard to make?
No, all the soups we make are, well, we try to make them vegetarian, so we start out with a vegetable stock.
Yeah.
We use proportions that we, by eye, really. We make a few gallons at a time. We usually make enough for a day or two for the restaurant. For the fennel, we're using fennel tops because we're using the bulbs for something else. And the potatoes are, you know, obvious. It's pretty simple. You have to start with a flavorful vegetable stock that we basically make from scraps and things from around the kitchen that we've saved up for a day or two. And, you know, you sweat some onions and...
How do you sweat an onion? It sounds like a joke, but
sweat an onion. Well, you know, you start out with a pan that's maybe some butter, olive oil, depending on if you want it to be dairy free, and you cook it over your onions over a low heat until they begin to soften, and then you start adding your other things and the liquid, and you cook it until the potatoes are cooked, and put it in a blender and season it up. It's really. Not, you know, it's not complicated. It's just doing a lot of little things right and paying attention to what you're doing and tasting all the way, and so that it tastes good to your own palate.
Bib lettuce, you know, that's just lettuce, right?
Pardon me?
Bib lettuce is just lettuce?
Yep.
It's the stuff you put on it that becomes
important. Well, a little bit, but like right now, the bib lettuce we're getting from Farm Girl Farm, which is Laura Meister's farm in Sheffield, is extraordinary lettuce that we're so...
You can really tell the difference, huh?
Well, just visually you can tell the difference and the taste-wise as well. I mean, it's not just her lettuce. I mean her lettuce is extraordinary. You know, we grow some of our own things.
Yeah.
Our lettuce was awful to start with anyway at the beginning of the season. It got a little overgrown, and we tasted it, and it was bitter, and we really couldn't use it. And you learn an appreciation for, you know, what it takes to grow even something as simple as a head of lettuce, you know, properly.
Wow.
And hers is delicious.
Okay, so your number one thing, I suspect, is a rack of lamb, right? Saturday night, maybe?
Saturday night, yeah. You know, we have a prefix menu that, you know, it's all one price, so you can choose what you want. And rack of lamb is probably the most popular choice. We actually get our lamb from a local purveyor. It's Edelweiss Veal in Albany. He sells lamb. He gets it from a kosher market down in the city. And it's a domestic lamb, and it's not cryovac'd. It's a nice, fresh product, and it's... we get a lot of great comments about the lamb.
Okay, I could go on and on because I love talking to you about what you do. But let's go to Kelly from Pittsfield. Okay, Kelly, you're on. What do you got? Bring it.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Perfectly.
Great. And I feel more comfortable talking to the chef after I heard he cut his finger. I feel interested.
Very flavorful, you know.
Yes, exactly. I'm one of those people who's obsessed with the Food Channel and et cetera. I started several herbs on the back of my deck this summer. I grew a beautiful basil plant, the large leaf and the small. I've got dill, I've got rosemary, I've got peppers and tomato. But now the summer's ending, I've got parsley like crazy, beautiful. But I'm not really sure what to do about protecting or harvesting these fresh herbs that I've got in pots out on my giant deck. I just wondered what he thought.
Okay, great question asked. Now,
yeah.
Answer.
Of course, my wife is the herb expert. She was the head gardener at the Hancock Shaker Village. So
really?
Advice about what to do with plants would be information that sort of pass through osmosis from her to me. So, I would say, you know, you can bring those plants in, just protect them from the frost and hang on to them and take cuttings from them as long as you can. You know, some of those things can be dried, some can be frozen, some, you know, they can be used up, you know, wintered over. It depends on the individual plant, I guess.
Kelly.
Can I ask a follow-up question about pesto?
Okay, it's got to be real fast. Go ahead.
Real fast. I made pesto for the first time by myself. I've seen it done 1,000 times on the Food Channel. And I felt that it was bitter. And I don't know whether it was I overcooked my pine nuts or what may have... Because otherwise the basil...
It was probably the olive oil. That's where you're going to get a bitter or a peppery or an off flavor that you might not like. The milder olive oil is the best choice in my opinion. Anyway,
where do you get yours, Peter?
Thank you.
We use a California olive oil that we get from one of our purveyors out of Boston, and we're pretty happy with it. It's a fruitier, not so. You know, the aftertaste is pretty minimal, so we like it. It lets other flavors come through.
Everything you ever wanted to know. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. Everything you ever wanted to know about cooking from Chef Peter Platt, who runs one of the finest restaurants you'll find anywhere in the world. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Taste of New Paltz, 24th Annual Festival, offering tastes from regional restaurants, wineries, farm markets, and craft beer, plus live music and crafts, Sunday, September 14th, Ulster County Fairgrounds, newpaltzchamber.org. Berry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics, berrypricearchitecture.com. Schenectady Green Market, a community marketplace providing fresh local produce and artisan goods every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. around City Hall, schenectadygreenmarket.org. And Dorset Theater Festival, presenting Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap through August 30th, dorsettheaterfestival.org.
And we are back, thanks to the engineering magic of Zach, who is the board operator who really runs the place. Okay, so Peter Platt, we'll talk to Maureen, but not before I tell everybody I want you to call 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Maureen, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I'm going to have, some people over for Labor Day, and I want to use stuff from the garden, so I kind of am doing a eggplant lasagna, you know, instead of lasagna noodles, using eggplant, and I'm going to make pesto with something. But I also want to do chicken, and I don't know what to do with the chicken. I mean, I can grill it, I can, you know, put it in the oven or both, or
a lot of times when we grill chicken, we do it both. Like you said, you know, we'll marinate it, and that's a great way to use up some of the herbs in your garden.
Well, that's what I want to know is about the flavors that would go with that stuff.
Because
I have all kinds of herbs.
Well, you know, thyme, rosemary, parsley, garlic, those are the obvious choices. And then, you know, if you want to, I mean, the problem most people have when they grill chicken is that they burn it before it's cooked, so... We usually cook it all or almost all the way in the oven, you know, after having been marinated, and you cook it with the herbs, and then you finish it on the grill to get the nice grill flavor, but you can take it off the grill knowing that it's cooked and before it gets burned.
Oh, okay. See, I was going to do it the opposite way, so I'm glad I called.
Yeah, you were right to call. I, on the other hand, Chef Shartok, I bake it first. I put my preparation of breadcrumbs on top of it. I bake it. And then for the last few minutes, I broil it. Is that sort of the same thing, Peter?
Sort of, except I bet you take the skin off and then, you know, where's the flavor?
Guess what? I'm not going to tell you out loud because people hold me to a standard of excellence and craziness, but I don't take the skin
off. Well, that's good.
But I don't take the skin off. Anything else there, Maureen?
No, that's perfect. I learned something. Thank you.
And thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Interesting, because you said something before the show that I was fascinated with, Peter, which is that when people go to a restaurant, they generally want something that they can't have at home. Is that your observation?
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, maybe I'm just projecting my own feelings on everyone else. But, you know, when I go out, I'm usually looking for something that, that you know, is unusual that I wouldn't be bothered to make for myself.
And do you have a steal? I mean, go to another restaurant, a fancy restaurant, and say, this is good, let's put this on our menu.
I haven't done that for a while. I think I wish I had more opportunity to dine out, and I would do that more often. But
you also have rooms, right? I mean, this is quite an establishment you have.
Yeah, we have 11 rooms, and we have a lot of overnight guests. We're full almost all the time.
And when people call you up and say, can I have a reservation tonight? And you say, I'm sorry, we're filled. And that can be sort of off-putting. I hate it here at WAMC. Somebody asks me to do something. I say, uh-oh, if I tick them off, you know, that's the end. That's the end of the fun drive.
There is a balance there. You certainly want to take care of your best customers and your regulars. And you, but you know that sometimes if you overbook a particular time period, that it's going to negatively affect the, you know, everyone else along with the people that you're trying to please. So it's a balance. It's always a struggle to, you know, make everyone happy and accommodate, you know, everyone.
Yeah, but there's a certain democratic instant in part of this. I mean, you went to Williams College, for God's sakes, and they taught you about, you know, social equity and all that.
Yeah, we try to be fair to everyone. And, you know, some people think we save tables. We don't, you know.
There aren't a few put aside for the heavy hitters.
No.
Okay. We have a wonderful phone answerer today, Dina Salzman. But I want to make it clear that we always leave the old ones up until we hang up. Okay, so in other words, the one before. Okay, let's go to Joanna from South Hadley, Massachusetts. I know South Hadley. How you doing?
Yeah, just fine. I have a question that goes back to the 50s. When I grew up in South Hadley, there was an elderly woman who lived next to us who was a pretty self-sufficient farmer, and she used to make her own rose water, and she made rose water cookies, and these things were so delectable. And so I've wondered all these years, how do you make rose water? Is it possible to make rose water? Do you ever use rose water?
Well, we do use rose water occasionally. We used to use it in ice cream, and you always run the risk of it tasting a lot like soap.
Well, what is it?
It's actually the rose petal.
Really?
When we've done it, we've taken a bunch of, well, where I used to live in Richmond, we had some old rose bushes that had sort of those kind of, you know, old-fashioned roses that were really aromatic, and
yes.
I'm not sure that we actually
you
made.
Mean they smelled good. Is that aromatic?
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Okay. They smelled good, and so we would cook it in cream, and then the smell, the flavor would infuse into the cream, and then we would use it that way.
Can you eat rose leaves?
I suppose.
It's not like nasturtium, which you can eat, right?
You can eat a lot of flowers. We usually, usually we stick to the tried and true, like nasturtiums. But if we're using something that we're not sure about, we always check. And, you know, and I think with most roses, unless they've been sprayed, you know, the petals are pretty safe to eat.
So interesting because, you know, I look at roses. I love roses. I have a lot of rose bushes. I always want to eat them because they look like something you'd want to eat. But I've never had the feeling you could eat them. It's just that I want to eat them.
Yeah,
do you understand the issue?
I think they're more of a flavoring ingredient than they are actual. You couldn't make a meal out of them, you know.
Yeah. Well,
they look great in a salad, the petals and stuff. It's, you know.
Do the deer eat them?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that either.
You got me on that one.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, okay. So,
Thank you so much.
Go ahead. I'm so sorry, Joanna.
I might do a little bit of internet research to see if I can find any other people who talk about
rose water.
My remembrance was that Mary Miller used to soak her rose petals in something, and I didn't know if it was water or...
It was probably some alcohol.
Or what it was.
It's probably some, like, a neutral grain, like vodka or something that you could soak it. And I'm sure there's an extraction process that, you know, you'd find on the internet.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Okay, that's a great question, Joanna.
If my wife was here, she'd know, that's for sure.
Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot. Okay, and that goes off. And now it's Alex from New Lebanon. Okay, Alex, you're on.
Oh, hi. Peter, how you doing? I actually worked for you in the summer a while back, years back.
Oh, well, it's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, yeah. It's an amazing place. And, I always remember... I remember working there. I'm in the hops business now, and I've been learning about how they get into either used in food. It's kind of a new thing, but I had a couple chefs asked me about, you know, how they might use them in a dish. Like, my thought was to kind of make an oil, like a infused oil out of them.
Okay, so like on Medical Monday, I want to ask a question, Peter. What is a hop?
Hops are, you know, what you... You see them on beer bottles. If you look for a picture of them, they use them in beer making mostly. And it's quite a valuable crop. There's a shortage of hops around the country.
On Route 41, there's a hop farm. I don't know if you've seen it, but there are these big poles, and then they come down, and they're trying to develop hops there.
They're beautiful. We have at the inn, we have a arbor, you know, round hoop thing that my wife grows hops. They're gorgeous. We haven't tried using them to make an infused oil, but it seems like a great idea.
Well, what is infused oil again?
Well, if you were to take, you know, oil and either, you know, cold infuse it, just leave it in the cold, or put in a blender, and the heat of the blender sometimes is enough to, you know, pulverize the, you know, hops in this case, and then you would let it sit in that and put it through a strainer. And then the oil that you have would, of course, taste just like hops.
Anything else, Alex?
No, that'll do it. Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling.
Hey,
appreciate it.
Thanks for calling. Nice hearing from you.
Right. Yeah.
1-800-348-2551. Okay, that's great. And I did not say one word about at the hops. Let's go to Lisa in Hurley, New York. Okay, Lisa, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Perfect.
Hi. I've been a vegetarian for 5 years, and I've been a vegan going on 3 years. And I'm just wondering if the chef knows any kind of vegan breakfast that I can make myself in the morning, considering I don't have an oven. Usually I eat tomatoes with an avocado and some bananas, but I'm kind of getting bored of that. So I wanted to know if you could steer me in the direction of a vegan breakfast.
Well, you know, we're cooking a lot of, you know, barleys and you know, whole grains. And I think if you were to take, like, a pearl barley and, you know, we make a pearl barley salad with just vegetables that goes with a fish dish. And I bet, you know, sort of thinking out loud that, you know, if you were to mix the pearl barley with fruit and, you know, either serve it warm or cold, that could be something that you could have for breakfast.
What about farina or oatmeal?
You know, in the summer, it feels heavy in my stomach. I usually eat things like that in the winter. Which is fine, just sometimes, you know, like in the summer, I want something light. And I've just, you know, I've tried to, you know, I make smoothies and things like that, but I'm just trying to look for something a little different, something outside the box.
So eggs are out, right?
Eggs are completely out. Yeah. Eggs are out, yeah.
Yeah, no eggs, no cheese. It's a tough life as a vegan.
Yeah, you know what though? I love it. I can't complain. Thank you so much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You, Lisa.
Thanks for
Appreciate
calling.
Thanks.
Okay,
great. That's great. Okay, let's go to Susan in Great Barrington. Hi, neighbor.
Hello. This is Susan. Am I talking to you?
You're talking to
I didn't hear you say you're on the air.
Yeah. Well, as we always say, bring it.
I have a comment on the rose water, which if she can't make her rose water, you can generally buy it in, like, Middle Eastern grocery stores because they bake all the time with it. It also boosts the flavor of raspberry if you're making a raspberry sauce, but you got to use a tiny bit. But my question actually is, in a lot of my recipes for, like, stews and things, when I'm very much a recipe person. I'm not a creative solo chef or chef at all. They always say, and put a garni in your thing, and I'm assuming that's like a little bundle of spices. And I'm just wondering if there's a rule of thumb for, like, if you're using beef, these are the spices that you want to use with that. If you're using duck, or I just never know what to put in this little bundle that they want me to put in there.
Well, like a bouquet gardenie is pretty standard. It's, you know, parsley, bay, thyme, and, you know, it's not nothing.
What do you do, tie it together or something?
You can tie it together. You can put it in a piece of, like, cheesecloth or muslin, or you can, there's interesting ways that it gets, you know, you can tie it with string and wrap it inside, like, a leek leaf.
Would a rubber band be out of the question?
A rubber band's not good, because you don't want to, end up tasting like a rubber band. I used to cook lobsters with the rubber bands on the claws, and I had a French chef at the time. His name was Joel, and he was really angry with me for the rubber on the lobster, and I couldn't understand what he was so upset about. And because I had been cooking lobsters for probably 3 years with the rubber bands on, and so now I always take the rubber bands off.
Either the lobster gets you, or
I think it turns it into a fair fight. You know?
Fair fight.
Yeah.
I like it. There will be somebody who calls and takes objection to our kidding around about that. Okay, Susan, anything else on that?
Can I sneak in a quick egg question?
Sure.
Can I interchange my duck eggs with my chicken eggs and goose eggs? I mean, can I use them all? I mean, I know proportions might be a little different, but the goose egg, I'm most unsure about. Is it like a regular chicken or duck egg?
I don't. I think in a recipe, as long as you're using weights, it should work.
Right.
The flavor will be a little bit different, but it's always interesting to see how things change.
What do you mean weight?
If you measure by weight, like obviously one chicken egg is going to be different than one duck egg, but in more professional books, they'll ask you to weigh the eggs.
Okay, great. Okay,
thank you very
Susan,
much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. We want you. Let's go to Sissy from West Stockbridge, one of my favorite places in the world, you know. Okay, go ahead, Sissy.
Yes. Hi, Alan. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I have a couple of questions. We have like 5 acres of wild leeks and ramps. Now, I need to, for the holidays, I want a killer recipe for wild leeks other than, you know, soups and stews. And I'm not quite sure how you do a potato leek soup. Do you have any?
I mean, you can take any, you know, the potato leek recipes are pretty standard. It's just a question of proportions, I guess. And you can substitute ramps or wild leeks for regular leeks, and we've done that before, that's for sure, and it works great. It has a, you know, quite a bit different flavor, but we've served that at the restaurant before.
Talk to us about ramps a little bit, will you? Because that's all hot now. Everybody's talking about them, right?
It's
very fashionable.
It's more of a spring thing. We've been out, digging ramps for
how do you spell it? How do you spell
years.
That word? How do you
Ramp,
spell it?
R-A-M-P-S.
Ramps. Okay, yeah. Good.
And they are plentiful in the Berkshires. And if you wander around enough, they're the first thing out of the ground in the spring, so they're easy to find.
Are they sort of garlicky?
Very. They have a strong onion, garlic-type flavor and smell.
Right, the leeks can be harvested throughout the summer as the ramps leave. As the leaves decay, the leek itself is getting larger in the ground, and so we can harvest them and keep going with them all through the summer. And second part to my question was, do you have a way of preserving? Do you freeze, or are they better stored like onions, just in the dirt? You know, we clean them off, but don't process them. Is there a
We've only harvested them in the spring, and the most common way that people seem to keep them in the kitchen is pickled, and so we pickle
right.
them. But you can certainly freeze them, especially for something like a soup. Freezing works great. And
I'm a little confused. I'm sorry. Is there a relationship between the leeks and the ramps?
She's calling it basically the same thing. So I believe you're just it's referred to as like a wild leek as a ramp is often called.
And we use the in the springtime, like Peter said, they're the first things up. They're bright green, and we use them in salads and in pestos. And then as the leaves, you know, as the season changes, the leaves die down. Now the energy is going into the leek itself, which is underground. It's like a bulb.
Yeah, they'd be hard to find right now, I think. You know, unless you really know where to dig.
We've got 5 acres here. I've eaten leeks and picked and cleaned, and I just want to do one good thing on Thanksgiving that will, you know, wow everybody with them. So,
well, you know, you could almost do it like a, you know, like a creamed onion. I think you could probably do the same thing with the leeks.
Yeah. Hey, Sissy, thanks for the call. Appreciate it a lot.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
We are going to take a very short break. So Beth from Montgomery is next up. You stay right where you are, Beth. We'll be back in 7 or 8 seconds.
Support for WAMC comes from the Bee's Knees Cafe at Heather Ridge Farm, Preston Hollow, New York. Lamb roast and smoked chicken barbecue, Sunday, August 31st, noon to 4 p.m., 518-239-6234 for reservations. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org. Pangea, North Bennington, Vermont, catering Southern Vermont weddings and corporate events with menus designed for special occasions, vermontfinedining.com and Facebook. And Marbletown True Value Hardware, Stone Ridge, New York, a locally owned independent source offering Weber grills and accessories, Benjamin Moore Paints and Stains, marbletownhardware.com, True Value, start right, start here.
And we are on with the amazing Peter Platt, who, along with Meredith Kennard, are the proprietors of the Old Inn on the Green, one of the finest restaurants probably in the country. I can't tell you more than that. And it's a great place to eat. You have a chef de cuisine. What exactly is that?
Well, J.P. Carr, or James Carr, is my chef de cuisine. He's been with me since the Wheatley days. And as our business has grown over the years, my responsibilities have expanded. You know, we're very busy in the rooms, and my wife and I pretty much do everything. So, you know, we're serving breakfast, and I do the catering. And
is there a lot of catering?
Quite a bit. You know, some big events. We did Jacob's Pillow this year, and
I was there.
Yeah, and some it's other. Good. And some other, you know, maybe 5 or 6 weddings over the course of the year, and then smaller parties. And so between the rooms and the breakfast and the dinner and...
Sounds like a lot. Do you make the beds?
It's lots. Occasionally, yes. but anyway, I need somebody in the kitchen that really is running things and making sure everything is perfect. And
so he's sort of the head guy?
He is the head guy. And a lot of the direction that the restaurant's taken in the last couple of years has been due to JP. And a lot of the items on the menu he's responsible for, of course. And right now he's cooking all the meat dishes. I'm cooking the fish dishes.
Okay, one last question before we get to Beth from Montgomery. I wanted to ask you, in our house, which was built by the very famous Judge Dewey, don't you know, who was the presiding judge in the Lizzie Borden trial, and unfortunately that the house is done in such a way, it's got a lot of space, but done in such a way is that if you're up on the third floor and you make a piece of fish downstairs, you're going to smell it. Now, what's the best way to keep the fish smell down?
Use fresh fish.
I do use fresh fish.
Oh, yeah. I guess, some restaurants use a cloche, you know. And
what's a cloche?
A cloche is like a silver dome that fits over the top of the plate they use to carry from the kitchen to the restaurant. You can try that.
In all the old Abbott and Costello films. Yeah. Okay, Beth from Montgomery. Bring it, Beth. You're on.
Hi. Some 7 seconds. Listen, I want to know what the right way is to keep still fresh after you buy it from the farm market, because I try to put it in water, but it still turns brown after in the middle of the week. Doesn't last long. What's the best way of keeping still fresh after you clean it?
Well, Dill's a tough one. It seems when I buy it at the store, it seems to go bad before I get it back to the restaurant. But
I know it's terrible.
It's really susceptible to, you know, dampness and moisture, so that just, you know, turns it to mush. And I think if you buy it with the roots on, that's the best, and you can stick it in water and leave it outside of the refrigerator. The lack of sunlight in the fridge causes it to yellow and discolor. Usually you can get 2 or 3 days out of it, but I find that I can't keep it, you know, longer than a couple days at the restaurant. So I'm not sure, you know, that was very helpful, but that's my experience.
I understand it's a universal problem.
Yeah.
Well, thank you anyway.
I'm sorry about the 7 seconds, Beth. It's so long.
Now, listen, where is this restaurant? You're talking
about. That's a very good question.
Or town or whatever.
Sure. We're in New Marlborough, which is happens to have the same zip code as Great Barrington. We're just to the east of Great Barrington, and we're on Route 57. So if you're in Great Barrington, we're about a little less than 15 minutes from the downtown. So it's not well, you know, of course, it's a big listening area, but from Great Barrington, it's not too far.
Yeah, but from Montgomery, it's a little further.
Yeah.
But
it's a long way to go for some good land.
Let me tell you, we do dinner lodging things special. So if you're if you're able to drive to us in a few hours, you can stay the night, and then we'll take good care of you in the morning.
Sure. Thank you, Beth. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are really excellent. I want to ask you about liver. Now, liver is a toxin cleaner in most animals. So do you ever feel guilty about serving it?
You know, I feel guilty about serving all kinds of meat and fish, especially fish. You know, there's just so little of it around. And in terms of meat, you know, you hate to take the life of a living thing. You know, we are, in light of that, you know, we still serve it, of course, and we try to treat our ingredients with the respect that it deserves. So we, you know, it's not taken lightly when we buy our product and when we use it, and we try to use it responsibly and not you know, and with the respect that comes from, you know, eating something that used to be alive. And, you know, we try to buy animals that have been raised responsibly, and veal is one of them. You know, veal liver is we also get that from Edelweiss Veal in the Albany, which is a great company, and they bring us fantastic, very fresh veal liver. And was on the menu last night. Incredibly popular, and I'd say like...
Man, people don't get that at home a lot.
Yeah, they don't. at least, and my mom used to cook liver, and she overcooked it, of course, being British.
Of course.
But we still eat it, and we love it.
My PhD advisor used to take me into this diner, and she said, the food here is so terrible, she said, that they've imported a British cook. But I don't think that's fair anymore.
No, it's not. It's not fair.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Tell me about peach crisp. Is that hard to make a dessert?
Well, fortunately, Amanda Peralta is my pastry chef, and she's responsible for, her and her team are responsible for all the pastries. We had it on the menu last night. I got to tell you, we had a couple of them ourselves in the kitchen that they were delicious. And I guess the secret, if you want to say to a peach crisp, is that you use fresh, ripe peaches, and you have a wonderful recipe for the crumble that goes on top, because, of course, the crumble's the best part.
But what is the recipe for the crumble? I'm not going to have to hear and not ask you that question.
Well, I didn't bring the recipe.
If I tell you, I'll have to kill you?
Yeah. Something like that.
What's in a crumble?
For me, a good crumble's got, you know, there's some flour and sugar and butter and nuts and dried fruit and those things, you know, mixed together and in the right proportion. And, you know, it's funny you say that, because we had a crumble a few weeks ago that we were serving that, you know, the guys in the kitchen weren't too happy with. Last night's crisp had a big thumbs up.
Well, that's terrific. It is, and creme brulee. I mean, all of us who have ever, had a sense of anything we'd like in life, the boules are always it. But yeah. They're pretty caloric, aren't they? And they, you know.
Well, you know, we like to think of enjoying our food in moderation. So, our, you know, I think creme brulee, there's a lot of different recipes for that. We use like half cream, half milk. There's probably about 4 ounces of product in there with it. You know, with the egg. So
I'm getting awfully hungry now.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah. So that's good. So now, what fish is the best? In other terms of, I mean, everybody loves salmon because it's safe. But you serve halibut. I know that, right?
Yeah, we serve halibut. We like halibut because it's a East Coast fish. You know, it's a local product. It's a wonderful fish, tasting-wise. It cooks up really nice. It's
What's
a mild
the big secret?
Fish.
Not to overcook it?
Yes.
And not to undercook it?
Well,
right.
You can always cook it more, but you can't cook it less. So it's better to err, I think, on the underside. But I enjoy it. It's got a great mouthfeel. It's a mild fish. I tend to like the, you know, the striped bass, the cod, the...
I was going to ask you about the cods. You know, we're sort of getting towards Massachusetts where the Cabot's took to the, you know.
Yeah.
And all of that. What is that? I mean, you know, is used to have dried cod, but you don't use dried stuff, right?
Sometimes, well, you know, cod is, you know, obviously it's a species that used to be a lot more plentiful, but it's a mild, big flaked white fish that, you know, is fantastic. I think for relatively inexpensive fish, it's the best that you can get out there.
And how about striped bass?
Striped bass is, you know, seasonal favorite that goes has a short season for a couple months in Massachusetts, and it goes up and down the coast and is caught by a sport fishermen mostly right now. A lot of them are caught right from the shore, and they're right. Voracious. You know,
I remember all those fishermen on Fire Island, you know, surf casting.
Yeah.
Getting that.
It's exciting, and that is probably for me, that's the best tasting fish. It's got a nice flavor, and it's a beautiful fish right now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's go to Charlie in Amherst, Massachusetts. All right, Charlie, you are on. You're on, Charlie.
Okay, thank you. to all you foodies and experts, et cetera. I'm not sure I have all the names together, except maybe for Alan. I don't think anybody.
And you're talking to Peter Platt, one of the great chefs of our time. Go ahead.
Spell his last name.
Platt, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Peter Platt. Well, that almost rhymes. That's as good as Charlie B. Good.
Well, it's alliteration, as they taught him at Williams.
Exactly.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Listen, about liver and such. I grew up with farm animals and. Oh, well, have to get gross here, but castrating calves and raising cows and milking cows and all kinds of things on our little family farm. But I really grew enamored with something called chicken liver, much more over beef or veal or whatever. And so I'm just wanting our expert there to address himself to chicken liver, which I find so much more agreeable, available to make, and it seems to last a while in a plastic bag and a sealed container in a cold refrigerator.
And not that expensive, right?
Exactly.
Okay, Peter, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, my first memory of chicken liver was us boys' sleepaway camp in Wisconsin, where they used to bring around the giblets that they deep fried.
Giblets. Now that's another whole story.
And well, the chicken was included with the giblets, and the liver anyway was included. And so, I've always enjoyed it. If you're looking for like one of my favorite ways to eat it, I was working, I was volunteering with another chef at the Beard House, and I watched this guy make chicken liver mousse. And
chicken liver mousse.
And it was like 5 minutes before the guests were supposed to arrive, and he hadn't done this yet. And I'm thinking, when is he gonna? You know, what is going on here? And he got a pan really hot and sautéed the livers just a little bit, just to brown them on the outside, and threw them right into the food processor. You know, deglazed the pan with some cognac and garlic and shallots and things, and then. Threw it into the food processor and added a little bit of cream, and you know, bingo. It was done, and it was delicious.
Now, but let's go back to the giblets, for you guys, for a minute.
Yeah, let's let the expert tell us, tell his audience, how does he define giblets?
Giblets is the stomach, right?
Well, it's the, yeah, it's what you get in a little package when you buy, yeah, it. At least when you used to buy the chicken, it came with the giblets, with the liver and, you know, the intestines of some.
Well, you know, the old grandmothers in where I grew up in Mennoniteville, Virginia. They would have something called turkey veins, and it's like,
that
what
doesn't
are you
sound
talking
good.
And I think they're probably referring to the giblets.
Well, my twin brother Lewis, he lived for 3 years without anything else besides chicken giblets. He just cooked them up 6 or 7 different ways.
And they were,
and believe me, yeah, he is. And believe me, they were cheap, really cheap. Okay, Charlie, thanks a lot. Okay, let's go to Jamie in Allenville. Okay, Jamie, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? I got to ask you a question about something about foraging. It's somebody showed me the other day this, I've been yanking it out as a weed, and it's this clover-looking vine. It has little yellow flowers and little tips, and it tastes very citrusy. I was trying to send you a picture of it to ask you what it was. And that I'm wondering about that. And stinging nettles, they're very shiny leaf. I understand if you cook them, they taste like spinach. Do you do any like type of stuff like that in the restaurant?
We don't forage for the nettles. So we have bought them, you have to get them when they're really young. You know, before they're stinging, actually. The other plant that you're talking about is, of course, I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember the name, but I know exactly what you mean. They're all over the roads everywhere.
So stinging means you get stung?
Yeah, it leaves a... Yeah, it's kind
well,
of...
Well, they got little hairs, right?
Yeah,
and they... If you boil it, they go away.
Yes.
I understand.
Yeah, they can irritate your skin if you grab it. It'll leave them on.
Jamie was...
That little weed is absolutely incredible. The one with the yellow flowers, the way they taste and stuff. Do you cook with that at all?
We use it as a mix, and sometimes when we're making a salad, we'll take those mix
that's what I've been doing with
the flowers are beautiful, and we use a lot of flowers, and the borage flowers, and nasturtiums, and calendula, and those kind of things.
Well, Jamie,
I can't believe how many pounds I threw away.
Yeah, well, Jamie, congratulations.
Thanks, Al.
From coming from Allenville. Let's go real quickly to Chris in Mountainville. Okay, Chris.
Hey, guys, this is really a great show. I'm loving it.
Thank you.
But I just wanted to check, and I know you were mentioning fish and how you wanted to be choose sustainable fish, I assume, right?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I don't believe that there is a such thing as sustainable fish, but yes.
Well, what I found is really helpful to me, and I use it when I shop for fish and also when I go to restaurants, is from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. It's under seafoodwatch.org. Yeah. And they actually give you a little guide depending on where you live. I actually have the Northeast guide. And, I was looking. It says that halibut, which is from the Atlantic, is actually to be avoided.
Yeah.
They recommend halibut from the Pacific, that is sustainable. But if it's halibut from the East Coast, it's not sustainable. It's endangered.
Yeah, the halibut that's caught that we get from the East Coast that comes through the Portland market is often a bycatch. And
mm-hmm.
so it's...
What's that mean?
It means that they're fishing for something and they end up with halibut. And so instead of...
Byproduct.
Yeah, mm-hmm. instead of throwing it back, it goes into the market.
Oh, I see.
So
well, it's because it's so... The halibut hasn't really recovered from several years ago when it was so depleted.
Oh, no, it'll never... If it comes back like it was, it'll be amazing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's very...
It's the same situation with the cod, too. One of the species they tell you to avoid is Atlantic cod because it is so depleted. Anyway, it's a really wonderful website, seafoodwatch.org. And it really is very helpful if you're trying to be, you know, a responsible consumer and you want to just eat sustainable.
So, Chris, I am so sorry. I'm so sorry. We are out of time. I appreciate your call very, very much. Okay, and Peter Platt, we are delighted that you've taken time out of what I know is an incredibly busy schedule, and it's the old Inn on the Green, and it is in and it's on Route 57. Is that what you said?
Yep, that's correct.
New Thanks. Marlboro.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're delighted. It's a great restaurant, everybody. I've been there, and I got to tell you, it's wonderful. We are out of time. Apologies to anybody who might have thought about calling and is in the midst of it. For more about what you heard today, WMC.org. Thanks to our guest, Peter Platt of the Old Inn on the Green, for being with us. Support for the good for the Food Friday comes from Sundog Cider at Salacqua, locally produced hard cider from New York, Hudson Valley, apples, unfiltered, naturally gluten-free, handcrafted at a revitalized solar-powered mill in Chatham, New York, sundogcider.com, NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com, Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality. Whoa. Since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York, CafeCapriccio.com and Bra and Girl, new location, 306 Main Street, Great Barrington, a bra and lingerie boutique featuring personal fittings and styles from Waco and Chantel and Naturi in sizes 38 to 42H, open 7 days. We're running out of time. Thanks to everybody, Jessica Blaustein and Zach Malloy, and to Dina for answering the phones today. Thank you so much. We'll see you again.